When the music fades, all is stripped away, and I simply come, longing just to bring something that's of worth, that will bless your heart.
Hi, this is Chaplains Timothy Burdick
and Stephanie Burdick,
and we'd like to welcome you to the Visions of Love podcast, reaching out to the spiritually and physically blind throughout the world.
Hello, folks, and welcome to the Visions of Love podcast. In this episode, we feature part one of an interview with Todd Flowers, who is with Nashville Inner City Ministries. Todd tells us all about how he ministers to children. He also describes the camping trip that his church gives to these kids every year. We'd love it if you could listen to this part of the interview, and we hope that you enjoy it. Thank you.
It's all about you, Jesus. Thank you.
To contact us, all you need to do is go to mynvm.com.
NVM is an acronym for New Vision Ministries.
If you want to contact us, there's a contact form on the website. Or if you don't know Christ or need prayer, please call 507-369-6861. Thank you.
And now for part one of our interview with Todd Flowers.
Hello, everybody. I want to introduce Todd Flowers. He's with Nashville Inner City Ministries. Say hi to us and tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do.
My name is Todd Flowers, and I work with Nashville Inner City Ministry, and probably have been with Inner City Ministry for about 36 years now. So I'm one of the old ones, I guess.
Before we delve into some things, can you give us kind of the lay of the land, the complexion of the inner city there in Nashville?
Our program began back in 1979. And I came along in 1986. I actually moved to Nashville to go to college at Lipscomb. And that was when I started interning with Inner City, primarily as a way to help me pay my bills at school. And began working with Inner City as an intern and then volunteering with them a lot. And I've just stayed in that one place. Our city has changed a lot over the years, as you can imagine. Nashville's probably more of an it city nowadays than it's ever been, but those of us that have been here for a while have remembered the downtown area as being very different than it is. For the most part, I would say about half of the public housing projects are in the same places and in the same neighborhoods as when we started, and then there's probably another half of them that have been torn down and moved to Section 8 apartment communities a little bit further out. And so as that happened over the years, we've had to kind of expand the part of the city that we go to continue supporting our children and our families.
So one of the first things that was mentioned on your website, I saw you talked about spiritual dynamics of inner city ministry. Can you elaborate on that?
We've changed our mission statement several years ago to incorporate really some other things that we were really already doing. We just didn't say it. And so our mission statement nowadays is that we're a Christ-centered community organization that's dedicated to empowering the spiritual, educational, and vocational development of at-risk youth and their families. And that really encompasses a lot of what we do, not just in having Bible class programs for children, but also providing some vocational opportunities for them, and certainly plenty of spiritual opportunities and educational opportunities. And then we do a lot of feeding as well, because many times our children, when they come to Bible class, they're hungry, and so we always provide a meal whenever we bring our students on our side or at one of our learning center sites. So the spiritual aspect of it, I would say, is absolutely our foundation. In fact, one of the questions that I'm always asking ourselves is, what's the other side of the equal signs for us? Because when we pick up children on Monday night, Tuesday night, Wednesday night, or Thursday night and take them to one of our Bible class programs or one of our educational programs or something like that, to me, that's one side of the equal sign. And we do that, and we do a lot of feedings, and we do a lot of things on the left-hand side of the equal sign. But ultimately, our goal is for every one of those outreach programs that we do, for those to lead to that child or that child's family becoming a part of the inner city church. And that's the other side of the equal sign. And so we're always asking ourselves, is what I'm doing in ministry, in outreach, in feeding, in community visitation, whatever, is what I'm doing adding up to that other side of the equal sign, which means leading people to become a part of God's kingdom?
So if I put that
into my own words just to make sure I understand. You're saying, is there a balance between what we're doing socially and what we're doing spiritually?
Absolutely. It's always geared towards that spiritual conversation. And so my question would be, if we're doing something and maybe it's a feeding program, and the only reason we're doing that feeding program is to give food away, that's a good thing. There's nothing wrong with that. But our goal, I'm going to maintain, is always higher. We're doing that with a purpose. We're there to share a gospel message and encourage people to come and worship the Lord with us on Sunday morning.
Well, if I was in the shoes of one of these kids, what might my life look like?
That's a wide variety, because you will look at a lot of our children and you'll look at things like the shirts that they wear or the tennis shoes that some of them may have, and you would think, well, that child's got some money, but many times they don't. In fact, most times they don't. But then there's the other end of the spectrum, where children show up at our learning centers or at our programs, and they are in the middle of winter and they don't have a coat on, or they're wearing a pair of flip-flops because they don't have any tennis shoes. And so our children kind of cover a wide range of the spectrum, but the majority of them, I would say at least 90-95% of the children that come to our program are what we would classify as being impoverished. That doesn't necessarily mean all of the times that they don't have resources to provide food inside their household or something like that, but many times it does mean that those resources aren't directed to that child. The parent uses their food stamps for something other than buying the children food, or they use whatever resources they've got other than, you know, providing for their children's clothing needs or paying the utility bills or whatever the case may be.
So would you say there's a lot of abuse in the inner city?
I would say there's a lot of abuse in a lot of places, because abuse doesn't just mean physical abuse or sexual abuse or something like that. There's emotional abuse, there's authoritative abuse, there's verbal abuse, there's all types of things. And so it's important for me, when our children come to one of our sites, and you have to remember, their primary goal when they're coming to one of our sites, when they get on the van or when they get on the bus, they know they're going to Bible class. They know that's the one constant thing with inner city ministry, and so there's no hidden agenda. We're not bringing them there, tricking them into coming to a Bible class. They know they're coming to study God's Word that night. And they show up at our site. They may have had a horrible day at school. They may have gotten in all kinds of trouble. They may have gotten chewed out by their parent when they got home. But when they show up at one of our doors, we want that child to meet somebody that's got a smile on their face, somebody that wraps their arm around them, somebody that says, "Can I help you with something? Welcome to class. I'm glad you're here. How was your day?" And even if they get in trouble that night, we still want that child to know that they were loved. And the thing that really hits home with me is that child may have had bad experiences all day long, but when they came to our Bible school that night, there was someone there that loved them, and that's the best memory that I can leave that child with that day.
So a couple of questions I had. One is, how important do you think role models are in the inner city community, not just limited to the inner city, but since we're talking about that?
Right. Role models are extremely important, especially when they are men and women that are coming from a community. The best leader that we can have for our child is someone that lives in or grew up in the community that they're living in, just because they know what it's like. Now, it doesn't mean a child can't have a role model that doesn't come from one of our volunteers or something like that, but that volunteer will have to jump through more hoops in order to earn that child's trust a lot of times. And so the best role models that we have at Inner City Ministry is generally men and women that are a part of the Inner City Church that live in the Inner City community. We have hundreds of other volunteers that work with us on a weekly basis, and a lot of them are great role models, and a lot of them have really solid relationships with our children and have a lot to offer our children. But ultimately, the one that crosses those barriers the quickest for us is going to be men and women that are a part of our church, that go back into the community that they grew up in.
Okay, well, branching out from role models, I was thinking, what do you do in the way of one-on-one ministry, one-on-one mentoring?
There is a lot of mentoring, and we have to be careful with the phrase one-on-one, because the majority of our ministry happens in groups, and that's just a security thing for us, especially when you're working with children. But there's a lot of one-on-one relationships inside of those groups, and so the best scenario that we can have for one of our learning centers is the same students come every week and the same volunteers match up with those same students every week. That's the ideal. The ideal never happens, but hopefully at most of our sites, the volunteers are extremely consistent and the children are consistent, where they can get beyond just having an association. What I love is when I hear things like one of our volunteers has collected the mobile numbers of their group of teenage girls, and every morning before those little girls get up and go to school, she sends out a text message. Have a good day. Remember, I love you. Maybe attach a Bible verse to it. Call me when the day's over and let me know how your day's gone. Something like that. And our children need that type of encouragement in their lives.
That's great. Well, changing gears just a little bit, you talked on your website about the importance of transportation. Could you address that a little bit?
Yeah, that's probably one of our more expensive things that we do, is providing transportation, and that's just because most of our buses and vans are old, and so they have to be worked on a lot, and a lot of those get donated to us, but we've had to buy quite a few over the years as well. But fuel costs, insurance costs, all of that stuff's expensive, but ultimately the primary reason that we provide transportation is just because in the inner city community, a lot of people are not going to be able to afford a car or to afford insurance on the car or to do things legally in order to get their children transported. And so one of our successes has been that everybody in the community, since we've been here for 47, 48 years, however long it's been, everybody knows the yellow school buses and the yellow vans that we drive. And so in most of our children's cases, their grandmothers used to drive or ride those vans when they were little. And so everybody identifies our buses as being a part of the community. And that's a safety thing for us as well, because our buses are protected by the community. And so everybody knows that that's the inner city church bus, and they're not going to mess with anybody that's on the inner city church bus. So transportation, we provide transportation not just to our learning centers, but also to Sunday morning worship, to our day camp during the summer, to the travel camp that we do for 2 weeks each summer. And then there's a lot of transportation in our vans during the week for smaller activities, or to pick up some elderly people to take them to the pharmacy or to a grocery shop, or, you know, all different types of things like that.
Wow, that's great. Well, you had mentioned camp and day camp, and those were two things that I really wanted to zero in. Could you tell me about that, please?
There's 2 weeks out of each summer where we take a group of elementary and middle school students up to Camp High Lake that's owned by one of our sister churches here in town. And they give us that campsite for 2 weeks in order to take our children. Really, to take them to a place that they've probably never been. Now, most of our kids have been to camp, so they've been at least 1 year, but our kids don't go out of town very often. They certainly don't go to the woods. And so being able to take them up to those cabins and to enjoy what it means to sleep in a cabin where it is actually quiet at night, where you hear the crickets at night, where you can look up in the sky and actually see the stars. A lot of times when our kids get to camp, they're scared. They're scared because it's a foreign environment and they don't know how to interact with something that is as natural as that campsite. They're nervous because it's quiet. And so in their neighborhoods, it never is quiet. And so a lot of times our counselors and our staff that are providing the camp and the oversight and everything, they love having fun with our kids because they wake up and they wonder, why is it so cold in the morning? That's not cold. That's just we're sitting on a mountainside and
right.
The fog is on top of us and we're on the side of a river. So in a lot of cases, they think there's something. The other thing is when our kids go to camp with us, they're actually eating three meals a day with us. They're there for breakfast, lunch, dinner, and we eat well at camp. And we eat all three meals at camp. And usually our kids are used to having a bag of chips and a donut or some sort of junk food for their meals. And a lot of times it's actually kind of funny because they will go running to the nurse in the afternoon saying something is wrong with me. And what they finally realize is that they're actually probably for the first time in months actually eating three healthy meals a day. And so their digestive system is processing that. There's
wow.
nothing wrong with them. It's just they're not used to eating their regular meals.
And
they,
wow.
They think there's something wrong with them. All about you.
That concludes part one of this interview. We hope that you're enjoying it. And please stay tuned for part two of this interview in 2 weeks. Thank you.
You've enjoyed this, and we'll see you in a couple of weeks. God bless.
Thank you, and God bless you.